Imagine you're out on a small boat. You've plotted your course for the day. The sun is shining and the water is, relatively calm.
Sounds pretty ideal.
Right. But then you step away from the helm just for a moment. Maybe you grab a drink of water or, I don't know, look at a passing bird. And when you look back at the compass 5 minutes later, you are completely turned around.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And the crazy part is you're not facing a storm. There was no like massive wave. You just quietly, almost imperceptibly drifted off course. Welcome to the deep dive. Today we are exploring why that silent drift is, well, probably the most dangerous part of human behavior. And we're looking at how a concept called skillful mindfulness from the RAFT program acts as the anchor we really need.
I love that image of the silent drift because, I mean, that captures the absolute core of what we're unpacking today. Getting lost rarely happens with some dramatic crash. It happens through this really slow turning of the tide. And, in the context of the RAFT program that we're exploring today, we're specifically zooming in on chapter 63, which focuses on skillful mindfulness.
Yeah, and before we move off the dock to stick with the boat thing, I want to clarify what we mean when we say raft.
Good call.
In this framework, RAFT is an acronym. It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feel, Train. And for you listening, it really helps to know where we are on this journey.
Definitely.
Within the RAFT program's overall framework, we're currently in the training stage. So by this point in the process, you're the structure of your raft.
Yeah, exactly.
And now we arrive at the factor that keeps the whole thing from just falling apart when we actually put it in the water.
Right, and that is such a crucial distinction to make. We aren't building the raft anymore at this stage. We're learning how to sail it. And that brings us directly to mindfulness. But at this stage of the program, mindfulness is not about, retreating into some silent bubble or sitting cross-legged listening to a singing bowl.
Yeah, no gongs required here.
Exactly. The text actually calls it the captain's memory. It's this intensely practical capacity to remember what you're doing, literally while you're doing it.
Okay, I actually have to push back a little
Sure,
here
go for it.
because mindfulness has become such a massive corporate buzzword, right?
Absolutely.
It often feels like it just means, paying attention or taking a deep breath before a meeting. But remembering what you're doing in the middle of a heated conversation or keeping your intention alive right in the middle of a sudden craving,
Yeah.
that implies a lot more active effort than just like passively noticing things.
You are completely right. And you're actually picking up on a really fundamental mistranslation in our modern culture.
Oh, really?
Yeah. This concept actually traces all the way back to Gautama, the Buddha.
Oh.
The original Pali word he used for mindfulness is sati.
Sati, okay.
Wait.
And sati does not mean just bare attention. Its root meaning leans way closer to recollection or simply not forgetting.
Huh.
It's the capacity to hold your values in your working memory when the pressure rises and things get stressful.
That makes so much more sense. So it's the difference between passively watching a waves hit your boat and actually remembering that you are supposed to be steering the boat.
Exactly.
The program uses this really great extended nautical metaphor to explain how all these elements work together. So, if skillful application, which is the energy and effort we put in, is the engine or the sail of our raft, and skillful perspective is our spyglass or compass, and skillful intention is our rudder pointing us toward the safe shore.
Then skillful mindfulness is the captain,
Right?
because an engine will push you blindly into the rocks if no one is at the helm,
A spyglass is completely useless if no one remembers to look through it. And the rudder might slip a few degrees in a strong current. Without the captain there to notice that subtle drift, you end up miles away from your destination.
Wait, so this isn't about learning a brand new skill in the heat of an argument or a craving.
No, not really.
It's more like having a GPS on your dashboard. Like the route is already programmed. You just have to actually remember to look at the screen when traffic gets chaotic rather than just instinctively reacting to the cars swerving around you.
That is a perfect analogy. You're recalling the map. And this is so vital because, as the RAFT program points out, forgetting happens so quietly.
Yeah.
We don't usually abandon our values with some, grand dramatic declaration of defeat. We forget them simply because we're tired.
Oh, yeah, the tire drift is real.
Right. Or we forget because someone praised us and we became a bit arrogant. We forget because we feel slighted or just because something suddenly feels incredibly urgent.
It's just the everyday carelessness of daily life. We let our hands off the wheel for a second,
Exactly. And when that captain's memory collapses, we fall into what Gautama called heedlessness.
Heedlessness.
Yeah, and heedlessness is acting without remembering the consequences. It's operating entirely on habit. But mindfulness doesn't actually work alone here. It travels with a partner that the text calls clear comprehension.
Okay, so if mindfulness is the captain remembering the map, clear comprehension would be what? The captain reading the actual weather right in front of the boat.
Yes, that's it. So you might be mindful enough to notice anger arising. That's the captain waking up.
Right.
But clear comprehension is the faculty that actually asks about the depth of the water. It evaluates the situation. It says, if I speak from this anger right now, where does this current lead?
Ah, I see.
So it stops awareness from being just passive observation and turns it into active ethical navigation.
But if this drift into carelessness happens so quietly, like we are saying, how are we supposed to catch it before we're completely off course?
Well, that's the challenge, isn't it?
Right. And the RAFT program introduces a really fascinating concept here to help us recognize the mind's quietest saboteur. They call it Mara.
Yes, Mara.
Traditionally, I think Mara is depicted as this mythic demon, but the program frames this in a way that is far more insidious and way more relatable.
Absolutely.
Mara is that incredibly familiar, subtle voice of self-justification. It's the stowaway.
The stowaway, it's the voice that whispers, it doesn't really matter just this once,
Right.
or nobody's gonna
Or
know.
my personal favorite, I'm not being difficult or angry. I'm just holding them
Oh,
accountable.
yeah. We've all used that one.
It's that slippery logic that justifies a really unhelpful interaction or falling back into an old habit.
And what's fascinating here is how skillful mindfulness deals with that voice. Because our usual instinct is to either blindly agree with the stowaway and act out, or we try to violently suppress the thought and end up arguing with ourselves.
Yeah, getting mad at ourselves for being mad.
Exactly. But skillful mindfulness does neither of those things. It doesn't fight the whisper. It simply recognizes the pattern with familiarity and says, ah, I've seen this before. It spots the disguise.
It recognizes the familiar tightening in the body or the narrowing of the mind. And to do this practically, the program teaches us to catch the drift early at what are called the sense doors, because human experience follows this very predictable, super rapid chain reaction.
It's so fast.
Yeah. It starts with contact, so a sight, a sound, a thought. That contact immediately creates a feeling tone, which is either pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral.
Right.
And then that feeling tone creates a pull, like we want more of it or we want to push it away. That pull generates a story in our mind, and that story leads to an action.
And to really understand the speed of this, we need to artificially slow it down because the transition from contact to action can literally happen in milliseconds.
Let me try to break that down with a highly specific scenario, because I
Right.
think we all experience this pretty much daily.
Go for it.
Okay, imagine you're sitting at your desk and you open an email from a coworker, and the email subtly undermines a project you've been working on.
Oh, I'm already stressed.
Right. So that email is the contact, the sense door opening. Immediately, before you even form a conscious thought about it, your chest tightens and your stomach drops.
Yeah.
That is the unpleasant feeling tone.
And this is exactly where the divergence happens.
Right. Because if you're not paying attention, that unpleasant feeling tone instantly creates a pull. You feel this overwhelming urge to prove them wrong. Then comes a story. You start drafting a response in your head, gathering this mental list of every single time this coworker has been incompetent. You're building a
Oh,
case.
yeah, the inner lawyer comes out.
Exactly. And finally, the action. You draft a passive-aggressive email, your heart rate is elevated, and you are hovering your mouse over the send button, feeling this massive rush of self-righteous justification.
Mara's just whispering, they need to be taught a lesson.
Yes. And if you wait until you are hovering over the send button to realize what is happening, I mean, you're trying to turn a heavy raft around in the middle of a raging rapid.
It requires immense, exhausting effort to stop yourself at that point.
Yeah.
The momentum is already fully established.
Yeah.
If mindfulness arrives late, you essentially wake up halfway through a reaction, wondering how you got there.
Like, why am I so mad right now?
Exactly. But if it arrives early, you notice the very first tug of the current. So at the exact moment your chest tightens upon reading that email, the captain remembers,
Yeah.
this is just contact. This is just an unpleasant feeling tone. I do not have to follow this pull.
Wow.
And you just adjust the wheel gently before the story even has a chance to form.
I can totally see the value in that, but I have to admit, it sounds a bit exhausting to constantly monitor every micro reaction to every email, every conversation, every passing thought. Are we supposed to be psychoanalyzing ourselves all day long?
Well, the RAF program specifically warns against that,
Oh,
actually.
good.
Yeah, it's not about constant self-analysis. That would completely paralyze you. It's about light, steady monitoring. The early teachings give us four steady reference points to check, much like a sailor just casually glancing at the rigging, the wind, the water, and the compass.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Let's walk through those four reference points.
Okay.
The first one is the body. So, checking if your posture is braced, slumped, or restless. Because the body almost always signals a shift into a craving or a reaction long before the mind has finished writing the story.
That's right. The jaw clenches, or your shoulders rise up, before the brain even registers the emotion.
Yeah.
The second reference point is feeling tone. So is this current moment pleasant, unpleasant, or neither? And by simply naming the tone, we prevent pleasant things from quietly turning into grasping, and unpleasant things from automatically turning into resistance.
That makes a lot of sense. The third reference point is mind state, checking if the mind is contracted, scattered, dull, or bright. And the program really emphasizes treating these moods as passing weather patterns, not as your permanent identity.
I love that part.
Like, you aren't inherently a scattered person, your mind is just experiencing scattered weather today.
Right, that detachment prevents you from over-identifying with the temporary state. And the fourth reference point is principles. Are familiar patterns stirring? Are you seeing the usual hazards like ill will or agitation forming on the horizon? Are you basically remembering the map of your practice?
And to make all of this really actionable, the program offers what it calls a hinge practice.
Yes.
It's the simple three-step sequence: feeling tone to breath to choice. First, you name the feeling tone pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. Second, you take one conscious breath. Third, you make a choice.
It is brilliantly simple. Within the tiny gap created by that single breath, you just ask yourself, does this next move keep us on course towards the safe shore?
Okay, I need to challenge this a bit.
Uh-oh. Bring it on.
Because taking a deep breath is literally the oldest cliche in the book. When my blood is boiling because someone just insulted my work, or when a deep, familiar craving hits hard, taking a conscious breath feels physically impossible.
I know exactly what you mean.
The nervous system is completely hijacked. How does a single breath actually accomplish anything in that heightened state?
Well, it's not a cliche when you understand the mechanics of what is actually happening in your body.
Okay, explain.
When you experience that unpleasant contact, like the insulting email, your brain registers a threat. Your amygdala, which is the fear and reaction center of the brain, lights up.
Right.
It floods your system with adrenaline and cortisol, and blood flow literally shifts away from your prefrontal cortex, which is the logical executive functioning part of your brain. So the captain literally goes offline.
And the stowaway takes the helm.
Exactly. Your brain is physically preparing you to fight or flee. So taking that one conscious breath is not about magically feeling calm. It's an actual biological intervention.
Oh, yeah. A slow, deliberate breath signals to your parasympathetic nervous system that you are not in immediate physical danger. It slightly slows your heart rate. It forces this minor physiological reset that allows blood flow to return to the prefrontal cortex.
So you're literally buying time for the captain to wake up and get back to the wheel.
You're opening a neurological window. And psychologically speaking, this maps directly onto concepts like metacognition and decentering.
Okay, let's unpack those.
Sure, so metacognition is simply the mind becoming aware of its own activity. It's a supervisory level of monitoring that watches your performance. And decentering is the radical shift where you stop being trapped inside a thought and you step back to watch that thought try to shape you.
So you stop being the anger and you become the person observing the anger.
Yes. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this philosophical approach isn't isolated to Eastern traditions. We see identical mechanisms in Western philosophy, specifically in Stoicism.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The Stoics cultivated a practice called prosocia, which essentially translates to vigilant attention.
I always find it fascinating when ancient traditions from completely different parts of the world arrive at the exact same conclusion about human nature.
It really points to a universal truth about how our minds operate. The core Stoic idea, championed by philosophers like Epictetus, is that we do not control the first flash of an impression.
Right.
An event happens, an urge arises, an insult is spoken. That first physiological flash is entirely out of our hands.
You don't control the coworker's tone, and you don't control the initial flush and heat in your face or the tightness in your chest.
Exactly. But you have total responsibility for whether you give your assent or your agreement to that impression.
Ah.
The Stoics believe that between the impression and the action, there must be a moment of testing. You hold the thought up to the light. You don't just blindly agree with a thought that says, I must retaliate immediately.
So in both traditions, attention is an active safeguard. The Stoic tests the impression before assenting to it, and the practitioner of the raft program names the feeling tone and takes a breath to remember the path before the craving or the aversion dictates their behavior.
It is the exact same protective mechanism. You aren't trying to eliminate the waves. You are just refusing to let the waves steer the boat.
Man, that is powerful. So what does this mean for you, the listener, navigating your own life today? To summarize the core message of chapter 63, skillful mindfulness is the protective presence that turns careless reaction into careful navigation. It is the captain of your raft. It doesn't mean you won't experience storms, and it definitely doesn't mean you won't feel the powerful pull of unhelpful currents. It just means you remember the path. You catch the drift early at the sense doors. You pause to let your prefrontal cortex come back online, and you make a choice that actually aligns with your values.
It's the quiet thread that keeps the whole training intact.
Yeah.
It remembers your direction when your mood shifts, and it remembers your values when an urge speaks loudly.
Absolutely. Now, before we wrap up, we want to make sure you know exactly where to find this material. The Raft to Freedom workbook is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen.
Yeah.
And they're doing something genuinely remarkable by making the entire 66-chapter program freely available online. You can read the whole text for yourself at rafttofreedom.org.
It's an incredible resource. And as we close, we want to leave you with a self-reflection directly inspired by the program's journaling prompts.
Get your pens ready.
Yeah. So take a moment today to look back at a recent misstep or an unhelpful interaction you had. Try to zoom in on it like a slow motion replay. Can you identify the precise moment when carelessness replaced remembering?
That's a tough one.
It is. What was the earliest signal in your body or in your mood that you missed?
It's such a profound exercise in tracking your own drift. And to anchor that thought, here's a fantastic quote from the end of the chapter by Sharon Salzberg. Mindfulness isn't difficult. What's difficult is to remember to be mindful.
So true.
Which leaves us with one final thought to mull over. We have spent this deep dive focusing on how skillful mindfulness protects you from your own quiet drift.
Right.
But what if the ultimate value of this practice extends outward? What if recognizing how quickly a feeling tone can hijack your own mind helps you realize that the people around you, the coworker sending the passive-aggressive email, the driver cutting you off, are also just adrift on their own rafts?
Oh, wow.
They are likely completely unaware of their own stowaways, entirely hijacked by their own unexamined pulls. How might remembering that change the way we navigate the waters we all have to share?
It really changes the entire landscape. It turns frustration into understanding.
Ooh.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive. We will catch you next time.